thought that we'd take advantage of the fact that there are elders among us who know the parish church the way it used to be, and invite them to share with us some of the things that they used to do in the good old days that we might do again, as well as some things that we do now or don't do now that we'd like to do. And everybody here is an expert by virtue of being here and by virtue of being part of a parish church. So let's just begin. What do you miss most? Think in between popcorn kernels.
I think I'd like to know first is from a few of the older people what it used to be like.
Okay.
We miss most of the kids in our parish. We used to have so many young people, now we have hardly any.
So you used to have more young people, huh?
That's what we need.
Why is that you have less young people?
Oh, because our farms got bigger and our families get smaller.
Mm-hmm. Is it a rural church or a, yes, a small rural church?
Mm-hmm. Were there special things done for the younger people in the older church?
Oh, we used to have so much activity among our young people. In wintertime, we were having ski parties and skating parties and special retreats and so on. Now it seems like we haven't got enough kids to have activities. And then it seems like so many other things, call them what there are, away.
It's interesting you say not enough when Roger was commenting about 300 and Ron was 60. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to know what drew the kids to the church that they were familiar with.
Something I'd like to, as an aside to that, I'd also like to point out the fairly general statistic of church attendance as a whole. I believe it's, what is it, about 30-some percent mark on a given Sunday, something like that.
You mean nationwide?
In terms of nationwide or our parish in the world. And that's pretty similar in terms of not very good.
Did it used to be more? Percentage-wise?
It did. It used to be nationwide. Mm-hmm. You know, but the whole trend is down. I can remember when the average attendance would be was 47%. And I think that George had said in the 60s, mm-hmm. no, in the 50s it was about around 60%.
That's right.
He's right.
That's right. You heard good.
I listened.
You heard good. No.
I think one thing that I miss in the church are today is a collective sense of belonging to one another. That is, as far as the merger, that is, the union of congregations is concerned. I grew up in what was formerly known as the Norwegian Lutheran Church, and then eventually the ELC, or the Evangelical Lutheran Church. And I can remember days when we had circuit, or what we call conference today conventions, Luther League conventions, and you'd have hundreds of people at those Luther League conventions. And you'd have a great choral union where you'd have choirs from all the congregations. And you do that on a smaller scale and then on a district level. And then at the time of the convention, like F. Melius Christensen or somebody like that would lead this choir, and you'd have just hundreds and hundreds of people. And that was really a thrill to sing. Or even our Circuit Luther League convention used to be so big that we had to rent a tent, a big circus tent. And I remember when I was in a ninth grade, I was a delegate to the Luther League convention of our circuit. And that was the biggest event of my life. And I still remember what was said. It really made an impression on me. Because you were just a part of a large number of people. And you realized that the church was more than your little parish. And that's one thing I have missed in these later years.
You're speaking of Luther League and choral union. I was looking through some of my grandmother's things not too long ago. She's a member of Trinity also. And there was an old Luther League and Choral Union directory back from, I think it was 50-something, and I saw Carl Narveson's name as being on the parking committee. Carl was there.
Just held at Concordia College.
Yep, I was held at Concordia.
Very hot day.
1952.
That was it.
We had 23,000 people.
Boy. 53. Something I'd like to hear about is, what was the structure of the Luther League back there? I hear of...
I can tell you about that, Roger. We used to have different kids give, you know, short sermons, you could almost call it. And Luther League is so different now, you know, because we just meet and we would go. But it was a regular meeting. And you had a president and a vice president and a secretary and a treasurer. I mean, it was work. And we played games and we used to have lots and lots of fun. Not that we don't have fun now, because I don't mean it that way, but it was different. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. We had sleigh rides and things like that. I worked with Luther League a lot.
My parents tell me about it. The Luther League used to mean basically family night. Everybody came and they had potluck and the kids put on the program and the parents saw.
Did a lot of program work. I can remember going as a kid. That's 39 years ago, you see. But it's entirely different now. And another thing about they don't even call it Luther League anymore. And I have are you calling it Luther League?
Uh-huh. That's, we're doing that so we have an identification with the National Luther League.
Yeah, good. And I've gone to every big convention that they've had. And I don't remember the year of the first one that was held in Miami, Florida, of the big conventions for the Luther League.
1902?
you want to live till tomorrow, don't you?
He's
our
bus driver. We have to get back.
You know, you're going to run over him, maybe. But the Luther League at that time, the first Luther League that we went to, and I think there were around 10,000 at that particular convention. And to me, that was one of the best conventions that we've ever had. It was just a thrill to see the kids, and they carry their Bibles every day, and they went to the meetings, and it was very serious. Now, I've gone to many of these leagues since that time, and the last one, or the one in Houston, was that 22? No, the one in New Orleans. That was 22,000. Was anyone else there? Were you there? I don't know what you felt about it, but I felt it was so big that you were practicing, you got lost. And we were supposed to go to individual meetings, which we tried to find rooms, and by the time you found the room, the time was almost ready to go someplace else. And I know our teacher, the instructor where I went, and the instructor came about 10, 15 minutes late. Couldn't find the room. It was so huge and it was so big. And I hope that they would cut that in two, because I think our kids didn't get much out of that convention. It's just too big when you get that many kids, 23,000. It's pretty hard to entertain kids and have meetings and keep them going.
Luther League and choirs, two things that have been mentioned. Anything else? What about parish services, church services? Are they different than they used to be? The preacher preach shorter or longer? More interesting, less interesting?
Very long prayers.
That's for sure.
Very long prayers, huh?
President, sorry, I got to move.
One or two parishes that we know, but same pastor for 51 or 52 years.
Yes, and he preached a sermon, and the first part of the sermon lasted a half an hour, telling you what he was going to tell you about. And the third part of the sermon, the third half hour, he told you what he had said. And the surprising part was that people kept on coming to church. And do you know why they came to church?
Why?
Because he knew every family in that parish personally. He knew every child that was born. He knew their first name. They were all friends. And they all listened to him. Didn't matter what he preached. But he was an excellent preacher. He knew his Bible so thoroughly he could exegete a text, which a lot of pastors today can't do. I hope there's some pastors here that heard me.
He always came down a little closer with each, like he was in the pulpit with the first part of it, and then he came down out of the pulpit, and then he was down on the floor.
He got real close.
Yeah, he got closer and closer to you.
That's back up a question. I have a question about your comment about my wife asked me, and I played dumb, determined you,
exegete a text.
Does that mean from
memory? No. That means you take that text and begin with one word and you explain the word and you go to the next one, keep on until you've got the whole thing thoroughly explained. I think in our church, Herman Preuss, who was at the seminary, was the best exegetist of text that I've heard. Remember that, Pastor Witte?
Right.
He was a tremendous person. I loved to go to his sermons because everything was very thoroughly explained. He had his scripture, and he took that scripture and he developed it.
That's the idea of the development, isn't it? Of the text, of the meaning of the text, application, implementation.
I have a question about call it Sunday school. How many in your parishes still have senior or high school departments? They have high school departments. It seems to me that in those days when we had high school departments, that we had more boys and girls taking part in Luther League activities and so on than we have today. Am I wrong? That's what it seems to me. Back in the 50s and the 60s.
Yeah, in the late 50s and early 60s, the Luther League, I was in Luther League at that time, and they were great. We had big Luther Leagues, we had a lot of attendance, and we had a good core of a good peer group that we kept us straight, so to speak. But yeah, it was a good group at that time. There weren't real family get-togethers along with the Luther League. We had split off pretty much from the family, but we were still a good core in the church.
I was just thinking of, I don't like to put down where we're at now. I think that where we're at now, we're struggling with the situation as it is now rather than the way it was 30 years ago. And things that we have now that changed things from 30 years ago are, for one thing, television. And that's a big thing in people's lives. And I think that we're living in a time when there is a transition, or I could say a breakdown in the family, in family life. And I think we feel that with lack of real participation on the part of youth in our churches. And I think that the general cultural situation of our times, like I was reading in a magazine not too long ago where various ones were commenting on their on your courtship and so forth, and it just seemed like the going thing was to live with your fiance before you get married. And, you know, that's not the way it used to be. So I'm just saying that the way it was is fine, but it isn't necessarily, it isn't what we can have now.
Comments on that? Agree? Disagree? Mary?
My dad was youth director of the American Lutheran Church for 15 years. And before he retired from that position or took another call, the Luther League program, as I grew up with it in the 50s and 40s, so forth, I just thought it was excellent. I've been at Luther League conventions and so forth, every one that there ever was, I think. But he said that he thought that was now time to move on to a different model, and he really felt, had he stayed in youth work longer, that it would have had to have been a completely different thing than the Luther League as the church knew it. So I mean, it seems like we ought to be able to celebrate what there was, that it was good at a certain time, and that things, models, just don't always meet the present culture and the situation that we find ourselves in now. I'm not sure. I think I'm agreeing with what you were saying.
What did he suggest? Yeah.
Well, see, I'm not sure. He became a college president and died 3 years after that, and I often wonder what he would think of the youth programs now, because it doesn't seem to me that there's much material, at least, that's being presented to have to, so the parishes can work with it. But so I haven't been in a parish for a while. I don't know how the youth are treated, what they do, what they're challenged with. But he never, I never heard him say what he thought. He just thought that he would have to completely rethink the whole youth model that was so successful, I think, for 15 years or 20 years in the church. But I don't know what, probably that's why he decided to get out. He wasn't sure what to do then. I don't know.
I don't know, what might be behind that, Mary, but I can reflect on my own high school years, and if I could turn the question a little bit differently, the parish church as it used to be, what do you miss? And I think most people would ask that question and think back of things that they thought were good, and that's what they miss. And I would say some things there too. For us, it was a chance to participate. It was part of growing up. It was a community in which we all could be ourselves and be nurtured. And so we all came out, I think, rather strong individuals, because there was a caring community. But there were things that later I found that I had missed, in the sense that they were not there, that were terribly important. I do not think that through the 50s, in the congregation in which I was a regular participant, anyone ever said anything about problems which were bothering the nation, which were tearing the nation apart a decade later. Those were never discussed. Racism was never discussed in my Luther League. I cannot remember an instant when that was real. I mean, when I think back on that parish church now, It to me seemed a bit of a world, a community that was in fact a rural kind of ghetto, and where almost nothing was, and it wasn't a conspiracy, and I'm not blaming people, it's just a reporting of fact. Almost nothing was done to prepare us for the 60s. It was a naivete. I mean, the 50s, when you go back and look at the sociology of the nation, the problems that erupted in the 50s were all visible, in the 60s were all visible in the 50s. But they were not visible to us. And I think it was a kind of a cocoon world. And in the 60s, that showed up and among my classmates and so on. It was a shock. It was something very difficult to make sense of. And they ended up sort of expecting all the trouble had been started by agitators from somewhere else.
Larry, that just wasn't in the churches. It was in the colleges, too.
It was a national thing in certain groups. But to me, that's... The conclusion you draw from that, then, is that the church is a simple reflection of the nation or the community of which it's a part. And I think that is the case.
In other words, what you're saying, the church then, and maybe even now today, is not looking far enough down the road to assist the younger people. Well, they have to be younger. Mm. I think we make that mistake. No. Because church serves supposedly everybody. And I do know, when we call another an assistant, what the trend nowadays is to call, worry about the younger people. A lot of the elder, the senior members are forgotten. Mm-hmm. And I think the church has to look further down the road, how do we help those people 5 years from now, or 10 years from now. And we don't do that.
Well, we have one youth leader here. Roger, what do you think ought to be thing done in the church with the young people?
With the young people?
Yeah.
Boy, this is what I go to conferences about. We want to find the answer to you. But I guess what I see here is we're focusing in on youth, but in general, I don't think we're in terms of informing people about what is really happening. I don't think we're informing everybody in that way. Right now, the things that we're getting here at Holden that are very urgent concerns for our future, for the world, we're not hearing in the parish. Maybe kind of to change the where we're looking right now. In the 50s, what we were having blinders on, and we were ignoring the racism in our country. We were ignoring things like that. Today, I think we're doing the same thing with issues that possibly are being unfolded here and many others that we can't see, that we're not hearing in the parish.
You work quite a bit with kids. Are they interested in doing anything about the world situation? Are they interested in learning about world hunger? Are they interested in going out as a mission and doing something?
They're interested to a point, but they're sick of being told to go and walk 5 miles or 20 miles or whatever for the hungry people when they see everything else in their around them contradictory. They're sick of being the one, well, if there's a problem in the world, let's have our youth go and raise some money. And that to them is they see past that. They'd rather do just like their parents and drive their car around.
If you were to establish a type of thing where you would go as a family or with adults and youth to winterize a home, to get together to do something, to pay someone's electric bill, to do something good for someone, to help a needy family as a group, would that turn them on?
I don't know. We've never tried it.
Yes, we have, Roger. They used to, give a Saturday, and all the kids were asked to go out and do work, and the people would call the church, and they needed like digging in the garden or something like that. Of course, that's only a 1 or 2 day deal. But it was all donation as far as the children, kids were concerned.
Yeah, but that again, it was just the youth that were doing it.
Yes, that's right.
That was just the youth doing it.
But I think everybody needs to be involved in things.
I agree.
The youth don't want to do it themselves, which I can certainly understand. they need someone to look up to. Why should they go out and do something for someone if their parents aren't doing anything too?
We've got Trinity has a camp, and every spring and fall there's Camp Emmaus Work Day, and the people who run the camp pathways, they're always wondering, you know, why aren't there more Trinity people there? So since I've been there, we've taken a van load of kids out there, and we have fun, but they see that not very many adults are there too, and I think that's a problem.
And I was wondering, what is the general consensus about the high school participation over the last 20 or 30 years? Is it about the same as it was 20 or 30 years ago, or is it somewhat less or considerably less?
Considerably less.
Very considerably less.
Well, there's so much competition for the kids' times. Not only are they working their school activities, there are so many things offered for them there. They're just running all the time.
I was going to say, there is the parachurch groups like Young Life. We had a discussion last week about that, that come in and simply replace or make it more attractive. And John was talking about the fact that, what was it, the one person that he had talked to who was a Young Life recruiter was told to get the football captain first, and then they headed the cheerleaders and the class presidents and all the rest and get these into a real active Young Life group. And who wouldn't get their, you know, excitement by cuddling up to the, you know, the cheerleader, or, you know, the football captain or something else like this? And this has made it very, very difficult for some of the local parish, you know, youth groups. Young Life has the best of intentions, but oftentimes the results have been, you know, rather sad. And I know in Northfield there was some real conflict, and some places it's caused real bitterness. And I think that's another problem that denominations have had competition, not Presbyterians versus Lutherans or something like that, but parachurch groups come in and, you know, sometimes have better organized group dynamics because some of the pastors aren't trained in, you know, specifically in how to get teenagers excited and turned on and everything. And yeah. Some people from Young Life or some of the others know how to do this, and it becomes a formula sort of thing.
Is it the job of the church to teach and discuss and talk about problems like race, poverty, hunger, so on?
One of the jobs?
I thought that was the job of the high school for these young people. We used to discuss them in high school, all these problems. Don't they do that anymore in high school?
Well, if anything, I found as a history teacher that they don't teach history anymore. They just teach civics and you know, social and economic problems. But I think if the students in high school start getting the idea that all these things can be compartmentalized, you talk about one thing in school, but you can't talk about it in your church, I think then we're all the poorer for that.
Yeah. Question I have, Carl, is are all those issues things that should be discussed in the church in general? Or should we just look at those on the news?
Well, I'm just trying to make you think.
Yeah. Vice versa.
3 years ago.
I mean, all of the good.
Is it 3 years ago that we took 35 youth to Young Life Camp at Saranac, New York? And it was excellent all the way through. Just excellent.
So why couldn't the Lutheran Church do that?
I don't know, but it's...
It seems to me it would really be good to work together with these organizations, and you know, there's good in them, and they're doing a good job of bringing the kids to Christ, and I don't see any reason why they can't be utilized. We had several kids last year go to Jesus Northwest and commit their lives. But these kinds of things are, maybe they're a little fleeting, but maybe we need to pick up where they leave off somehow. Encourage them and give the kids more.
There are two things there. There's, first of all, they're good in terms of technique.
I don't agree with your theology there. When we're talking theology of the cross, it's totally contrary to what we're getting there. And at what point do you accept their technique without compromising your theology? I've got two brothers who were involved in Luther League under a pastor where they didn't understand theology of the cross, and now they don't accept it. Neither of them are within the Lutheran Church, and that is a risk that we are taking if we adopt that.
Is something wrong with them not belonging to the Lutheran Church?
No, but I think that we've got a lot to offer, and I hate to see our kids going off to other places.
That has a lot to do with your parents. You need a good, sound, basic theology, I agree. But if it means the difference between a kid going to a rock concert and a kid going to Jesus Northwest, I would say, oh, with my blessing, go to Jesus Northwest, which is all I have. But my son, from my son's example, he's got confirmation, he's got a good working knowledge of, let's say you have a good background in confirmation for the, of the Bible. And, but that's where I am. I mean, if he's not, if I have my brothers, I'd rather see him go to Jesus Northwest and not go to England.
I'll say I would have a real problem deciding between a rock concert and Jesus Northwest. I don't know exactly what it is, but I don't have kids, so if I don't have to make that, and I don't know exactly what Jesus Northwest is, but there are certain religious youth groups that I feel when theology becomes confusing. For example, so many kids feel that they've got to earn their way to heaven. And that is contrary to grace. And it's so easily confused.
Who's teaching that?
Very, very many youth ministries.
I understand that youth for Christ is going the world.
I've talked with both the representatives in our community from Youth for Christ and Young Life, and we've got a real semantics problem. Mm-hmm. They start saying accepting Jesus Christ. I see that as being upside down and inside out. They talk about being born again. That's not a part of my vocabulary. It's not a part of the vocabulary in which I'm working. And I'd rather not confuse the kids. I'd rather go to a rock concert with them.
We have some other people coming on
this? Well, I have a comment. It's not on this. It's interesting to me that the question is, the parish church, what do you miss? And all the conversation has been, what we've missed is a good program for the kids.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that in fact is the case, or if there aren't any kids here, whether there are some things that these folks miss other than a good youth program.
I talked about what Mary Tran talked about last night. She talked about the fellow that was very good at making Model S airplanes. She talked to a woman who was a very good real estate person. What have we, each of us, got to contribute to our congregation that interests not only young people but old people?
Is that what you missed in the parish church? The parish church was very good about evoking the gifts of the different people in the church, and it doesn't do that anymore?
I don't think the parish church in the early times was any better than the parish church is today.
Preachers can't get teachers. We can't get people that want to give us anything.
That seemed to be also one of the elements that was successful in the previous group of ladies, because each individual member of the group of ladies participated and was active, wasn't just an observer. Getting people to feel like they are personally responsible for the success of the thing and the extra participation in it, not just like a TV watcher sitting there and come in and show me up.
I think one of the things that made the Trinity in Vancouver so successful is the size of the adult plant. If you get one that is unwieldy by numbers, you know, if you exceed the number by, say, more than a dozen or more, you lose the intimacy that you have with a smaller group. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that makes the thing fit. With smaller groups, by small I mean anywhere from 6 to 12, with a couple of exceptions. But the group that used to meet as a quote adult Bible study used to get into more hiring, the more hassle, and their numbers were always changing. And some of them, when it was led by one of the individuals in the congregation, they were getting into numerous arguments which were a matter of interpretation. And some of them got rather violent and very verbal. And it really destroyed it. And a lot of people wouldn't go with it then. As soon as they adapted the other option, right, it made a substantial difference.
I think we have a pretty good organization at our church in one respect. We have a couple of Bible studies where no more than maybe 8 to 10 people can be there. And we meet in homes where we study some aspects of the Bible. Pastor Woody here is leader of the week. And we have a course of study. I think many more people could take part in it. What?
What material do you use? Publication with
Augsburg. Augsburg has a series of Bible studies that are from 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh, the little short ones,
right?
Going in the way.
Yeah, and we've had a policy of not saying we're going to sign up for 9 months from now, because that's too long a period of time. Mm-hmm. And we change courses in the middle of the stream, and the courses are short enough so that by Christmas time we have a different course of study, and that's been attractive. Don't forget that we also have, we meet together, the whole group,
right,
and have a supper together and talk about what we can do.
The group is speaking of, what do they consist of, who do they consist of?
The old people. Old people, young people. Yeah.
That's how they can, they can be single people, two people. But you know, it's a couple. Why? Why can't have them? Four of them.
But we don't think there are enough people taking part in it.
Yeah,
should be more.
In the parish.
In the parish.
If you couple to find out and why that's so, that's the truth. That's a gift. Interesting learning even more. That's why I asked about cooking about parish laws. How many people eat together still? Something that I remember as a child.
How many people eat together?
Yeah. Lots and always having time to share food and fellowship.
Well, they can get a cup of coffee and something like every Sunday morning at our church at 10 o'clock. And seems to me we have like 100, 150, 200 people that go down there.
But all they do is drink coffee.
Well, they drink coffee and talk. Well, that's a lot better than nothing. I should say that we also have forums and Bible studies going on at the same time for those that don't want to go downstairs and drink coffee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
if someone wants to go to the forum, take their cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah. Bring it back. Yeah.
One of the practices that our congregation has is a meal every Sunday. Very simple one. It's usually just a bowl of soup and some bread. Mm-hmm. But it is
been available to everybody who wants to stay.
Is that free?
Yes.
Who provides the...
We take turns. Each one of us signs up and prepares the food for all of us.
Who
The people in the congregation. I would prepare food for one week. There are about anywhere from 30 to 50 people in a given Sunday.
Now, that's Christian social, isn't it?
Well, it's social, but it gets sometimes not into study, but into discussion, like the words of life of the congregation, or what topics we do want to study, or what we like passage on to teach on for the next period of time.
What time of the day is that held?
It's on Sunday at noon.
At noon, mm-hmm. After the service.
After the service. Mm-hmm.
The day that you serve, you learn church service?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a quick question.
The only time we can be here is going to get me. But I just wonder, I mean, that kind of fellowship, is that common in your churches or other churches or not?
In our congregation, which is in the kind of resort here at the Madison Forest and College of Recreation. And at the local members are scattered all over the county, we have at least one potluck dinner in somebody's home scattered around the county. So we get into this place, there's 20-25 people in the congregation. We give a potluck to get into this very home. And then we usually have like here at noon. Because one of the problems in Mexico is when something comes to Europe, and people are scattered,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have a whole lot of contact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I have a son who has a small resort, and I remember a very amusing story. In a certain cabin, they had some friends together. Some were Catholic, some were Lutheran. Sunday morning came, and the Catholic church service was very early in the morning, and the Lutherans didn't have that early service much later, and as the Catholics were going out the door, one of them turned and looked at the people Lutherans and said, I wonder if they're right or we're right, or if they're wrong and we're right. I wonder. Something to think about. Well, but why were they loyal?
Well, that's point. Another step. Hoping that loyalty can be okay. You say getting up early in the morning and just making think about it?
Yeah,
getting up there early when you thought those other customers. What might the church be like? What do you miss about what might be like?
How do you miss
what might be like? That's a good Eastern question.
Well, I like to say that one is a good question, but I think it's in the answer. I mean, if the notion of church is more than the present community and it has something of a vision to it, then you have some kind of picture. And so there is something that is not yet that you miss.
Get as loud as we want to and dream up as much stuff as we would like, things that we would like to see changed or brought in or whatever. The ideas that seem to be pretty solid go, and some of those that don't, can go to the church board and then they'll take it from there and it's a feasible, good idea for them. Have we had anything picked up yet? Because I haven't seen that. Anyway,
like to share a little bit about our church in Clear Lake, Iowa. It was designed by the same architect that designed the Koinonia. But we started as an infant church, and we can break new ground. There was nothing we had to do, a formal way of doing things, so we are sort of a unique church. But we met for 2 years with an Episcopal congregation as we were getting started. We met at 8:30, and they met at 11, and we see as their church. And then we bought a piece of property and started groundbreaking the church. But I think the vision committee was formed, and they went around to all the commissions of the church and had them write what they envisioned our church would be and what purpose it would serve. And they gathered all this information, and they took it to the architect, and they said, this is what we're all about. And the architect said, it's the first time he has ever had an assignment that way, where usually people say, I want a church like this, and maybe for somebody. But it was the first one he had ever been commissioned to do that based in no dimensions or anything. It's just what we want to be about. And he just had all the new way he could possibly have. We wanted passive solar and a very energy efficient church and one that was multi-purpose, very different. And so we have that kind of church, and we've been in it for a year and funded. It's a multi-purpose room like this. We have very soft, squishy folding chairs that everybody picks up and puts away after the service. The children take part in taking the offering. All the members of the congregation help stain and paint and build shelves. And we even have a fireplace on one end of it where everybody brought a rock that was meaningful to them. And we got a bricklayer in our church to put the rocks together. We have meals in front of the fireplace, and soup suppers that all the families take part in. And we have, I think the most unique thing is that we have intergenerational. We don't have any Sunday schools where everybody's set apart. And that is, I think, what's unique for our church that we have now that I wish our children, when they were young, they were always segregated and had Sunday schools off in the back room somewhere. And to me, the intergenerational learning experiences that we have is just tremendous. The kids grow up feeling so much as a part of the church and they want.
You mean the Sunday school?
Learning experiences, intergenerational learning experiences after the church service.
So you have church service and then you also have the other one.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Okay.
How long were you using the Episcopalian church?
About a year and a half.
How did that go? The cooperation, was there any problems there?
Well, we always lingered over coffee too long. We took up too many spaces in their parking lot when we were ready to come to the lecture.
You felt kind of uncomfortable sharing it?
Not really, because we kind of worked it out. I think our minister and the fiscal minister kind of worked over a few things. And then we had joint soup supper during Lent, and the Episcopal women would sit one way to night and then listen, and then we would always meet together. It was that beautiful. They came to our kind of open house, and their church women had kind of a shower gift for our kitchen that was brand new. They had nothing to work with, so they gave us a shower.
Do you still communicate with them at all?
We go to their ice cream socials and they come to our
Well, that raised up something that I make in the pretty church of the future. is any meaningful relationship between my congregation and the congregations in its neighborhood. The church where we are members in Independence, Missouri, is a Methodist church across the parking lot. And there's no, absolutely no conversation, as far as I know, at least maybe between campus, but that's evident to the parish at all between two worshiping communities. We see each other in each other's parking lot.
They don't have
any way. Yeah, have they? And I just think that's kind of scandalous in a way. There are two communities who are people of God. And
I really like them to, you know, the Methodists and the Lutherans, they're all one of the buildings. The Methodists would be convinced that the Lutheran building was
We also have a community food basket, and every Sunday church is a big, oh, a big barrel, and they have a community food basket, and people all year long come and contribute canned food. But we do that with the Episcopal Church, and I think the Methodist is off. So there's an emergency food basket for needy people.
Well, I was going to say, this is probably looking back or ahead, I don't know which direction, but I'm glad I've lived long enough to see a relationship with other churches where you can emphasize the centrality of the cross and relationship to Christ rather than denomination. And I'm glad I've lived long enough that in our town, for example, Trinity and St. Joe's have a very good relationship with each other. And it didn't used to be that way. But one thing I was going to say that I feel that is good in the church, and we shouldn't all be talking about the bad. Paul says, whatsoever things are a good report, think on those things. And I'm glad to hear and witness the expression of lay people, lay men and lay women in the life of the church. Because I feel the church has become richer as a result of that. Early in my ministry, it was of the preachers, by the preachers, and for the preachers. And no lay person ever dared to express himself. When we used to have circuit meetings in the olden days, even though there were lay people that went there, none of the lay people would even go to communion. It was only the pastors that went to communion. And you talk about separatism. And it's really great to be able to hear lay people express themselves not only on business affairs in the church, but on theology. And women likewise. And I'm glad for that. That's a good thing that's happening in our day.
That brings up a really interesting point. My mother told me so.